Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome to the Political Party. Today's guest is Tim Lawton. Tim was one of the first people I ever had on the show, and he's been on periodically throughout the years. He's always great to talk to, because as well as being very passionate, he's funny, but he really defends what he would see as the classic conservative position on things. And this is fascinating on Home Office issues, because as well as being the MP for East Worthing and Shoreham, although he's standing down at the next election, his membership of the Home Office Select Committee and the way that he's dispatched his duties doing that, eviscerating Home Office ministers, Home Secretaries and Home Office staff, has been fantastic. But what does a Tory MP like him make of what's happening to the Tory party and the effect of Liz Truss and all stuff like that? But also, you'll have seen he was in the news recently. He got deported from Djibouti because he has been effectively blacklisted by China because of his raising of his concerns about China's impact on our national security in Parliament. And he tells here the full account of what happened. And he tells it in a very funny way, but there is a serious side to this, which he outlines about what it means for people who dare speak out about human rights abuses and security issues. And also, it's not just that you could get deported back to the UK. I'll let him tell the story because it's fascinating and time's daft. But it's incredible and it's very worrying. But he's such a good person to talk to. He's a brilliant guest and has been. Go back and listen to the other times he's been on the podcast because he's great. Anyway, I'm gonna shut up and I'm gonna leave you in the hands of this brilliant chat with Tim Lawton. Tim, you are one of the greatest guests in the history of this podcast, and I've been on a couple of times, although not for a while. So when I saw that you had been detained abroad, I'm sure, as with many listeners to the show, was really firstly quite worried about you, and then, well, tell us about it. I speak to you now as a free man, but what on earth happened?
Well, first of all, Matt, it's really good to be on back on your show and see you back to form because we've missed you.
Oh, thank you very much.
So my problems pale into insignificance aside what you've been through. But anyway, so Free the Djibouti One was a success. I've got this Wizzy app on my phone where if I'm feeling really anal, you can fill in all the countries that you've been to in the world. And my latest total was 86. So I've been to 86 countries. Not once have any of them refused me admission to them or tried to deport me. So I innocently think, right, I'm going to go to Djibouti because I've been in Somaliland, which is this strange breakaway republic, part of Somalia next door. And the rest of my delegation decided to come back via Addis Ababa, which wasn't a good choice because their luggage didn't accompany them, as it turns out. I decided to be more adventurous and come back via Djibouti, which is the smallest country in Africa. I thought I wouldn't have a chance to go there otherwise. I just wanted to do a bit of R&R. It's the lowest point in Africa with a sort of lake that's like the Dead Sea. And then I was going to have a quick meeting with the British ambassador to debrief on what I'd done. I was going to be there for literally 30 hours. So I turn up at Djibouti Airport, not the most international metropolis in the world. First off the plane, go and smile at the immigration officer, said, hello, here's my passport. I'm just here for a short trip for a bit of leisure. And then he asked me all sorts of questions and then scanned my passport, disappeared, went away in a huddle, came back and asked me what I did. And I said, I'm a member of parliament. And things turned distinctly frosty. So I was then literally put in the naughty corner in the sort of what passes for the arrivals lounge for at least an hour. I kept asking what's going on. They said, oh, no problem. It's just procedure. And then that procedure turned into the guy ushering me into a room, up some steps, at which point he turned turtle, rushed out and locked the door behind him, leaving me in this rather strange sort of holding room where I was for another hour or so. Eventually, a couple of immigration officers came to tell me, we're not coming to Djibouti and you're going to be on the next plane out. And there's a cafe here, but it wasn't opening because it was Ramadan. And there's duty free. Well, that's not much good. And there's Wi-Fi, which wasn't working. So you'll be on a plane in 5 hours' time. So, well, that was all very helpful. And then they came and I couldn't get my bloody phone to work as well to try and get help. Nobody there spoke English. And then three of them came back about an hour later just to reinforce that I'll definitely be put on the next plane home. So don't even think about it. That was the end of that. Anyway, I eventually found some Wi-Fi to work in this room, got hold of the British ambassador, and he sent along his deputy, who very kindly brought a bag full of crisps, biscuits, and fizzy drinks to keep me sustained. So big tick for the British Embassy in Djibouti, who were really helpful. But even they couldn't persuade my captors to release me. And I was eventually, after 7 hours in detention in Djibouti airport, put on the Qatar plane home 24 hours earlier than I'd anticipated. And that's my experience of Djibouti. I wouldn't go there.
But you can now tick it off on your app.
So you... No, I can't. I don't count the immigration desk and the tarmac as visiting a country, frankly, Matt. So I think we'll give that one a miss.
So at any point of this, were you scared?
Well, I thought it was, it was just there being a bit too bureaucratic. I said I'm going there as a tourist, but then they asked me, what I've been doing, how I got there, and what I did, and the whole MP thing. And that usually, usually saying you're an MP makes them, okay, we may better take this a bit more seriously. But in their case, it made them even more hostile. So clearly they had found something out about me. And what is behind all this is we've been to Somaliland, which is trying to get recognition, and it's a really interesting country, actually. It's been independent, supposedly, since 1991. And it's quite a stable country. And it's a country that the UK, it used to be a colony. It's an old British Somaliland. And it's just done this big deal with Ethiopia about developing what could be the most important port in the area. And we've been very critical of China in particular, because China has been, as you know, in all parts of Africa, buying influence. And they've been trying to undermine Somaliland and undermine this deal. And instead, they are the biggest creditors to Djibouti. The Djibouti is owed them £1.4 billion. There's now a Chinese naval and military base there with 2,000 permanent Chinese troops, with a dock big enough to take a Chinese aircraft carrier. They've been building stadiums and departments for government and, buying favour, and basically. So what China wants, Djibouti goes along with. So I'm on the China blacklist, as you know, is one of five sanctioned MPs. And because there'd been quite a lot of publicity about our trip to Somaliland, clearly they've got wind of this, I turn up and I'm on their hit list. And that's why I wasn't let into the country. And, I'm public enemy number one for China. So that makes me public enemy number one for Djibouti. So I think that's what was behind it all.
It could be that. Or those immigration officials had seen Tower Block of Commons. I'm like, that's that Tory guy. That's Tim Lawton from Channel 4's Tower Block of Commons. Detain him now.
I know I'm a bit of a media tart, Matt, but I think even my celebrity status doesn't go quite as far as Djibouti in the Horn of Africa by a lot of people who don't speak very good English anyway. I'm not aware that Tower Block of Commons was ever translated into Djiboutian French.
Well, it could have been subtitled or something, or... maybe those guys had visited and were fans. So you were able to get out of the ambassador pretty quickly then. I'm guessing, in a way, if this happens to anyone abroad, they should think of contacting the British Embassy. But How on earth do you get a fast response out of them?
Well, I mean, that's what embassies are there for, to help with British citizens to get into to trouble. The fact that I was due to meet the ambassador for a meeting that night, so I got his, fortunately had his number. And I have to say, he was really, really quick and really helpful to respond, because we've got enough MPs getting into trouble for all sorts of things. We don't want another one getting into trouble on the front page of the papers in Djibouti on his watch. So, the problem was my phone just wouldn't work in the airport, and I couldn't get Wi-Fi to work. But eventually I found a space where it would. But as soon as I got hold of him, he came back and sent his deputy with all the goodies, which were really nice, actually.
Well, this is the big question. This is the most important part of your ordeal, is what precise goodies, what flavour crisps and drinks were you given?
So really nice sour cream and chive crisps. I rather like those. These big sort of chocolate cookie biscuits, all really bad for you. And then lots of high fat Coke and some water. I mean, they went well above and beyond. I was impressed. And given that we'd had the entire previous week in Somaliland without a drop of alcohol, I tell you, I got my free quota on the plane as soon as I got on it. That's for sure.
So when you're deported from a country, I'm guessing this is the first time you've been deported.
Of course it is. What, do you think I go through this every week? No.
Well, no,
you've never been refused entry to anywhere before.
No, but you're a troublesome member of parliament. You know, it's not. This could have happened before, given China's influence elsewhere.
Well, that, on a serious point, that is our worry, because when the five MPs and two members of Lords were sanctioned, it's now just over 3 years ago, they never actually wrote to us and said, "Dear Mr. Lawton, I'm just writing to inform you that we hate you and you can never come to our country." There was just a press conference in Beijing which announced these seven names, and that one, we could not enter China or Hong Kong, Chinese territories. Two, all our assets in China were being frozen. Unfortunately, we don't have any. That Wuhan summer residence of mine never quite came off. And we couldn't have any business dealings with China, which is really good. When you buy something on eBay and it turns out to be from a Chinese source and it all goes wrong and you want to complain and they don't want to know. Well, if you tell them, well, you've now just dealt with me illegally because I'm a sanctioned person, you get a better response. So it does have its benefit. Anyway, the point of
what
all that.
What are you buying on eBay?
I'm not telling you.
Okay.
I'm certainly not telling you, out of all people. Anyway, look, the serious
nylon,
point of all of this.
Cheap nylon clothes, I'm guessing.
I don't do cheap nylon or expensive nylon. The serious point is, Mr. Ford, that we could be on these Interpol red lists where China has repatriation arrangements with certain countries, that, you know, we risk turning up and being arrested and deported to China. Now, that hasn't happened so far, and we've been petitioning the Foreign Office to try and find out how safe we are. But there are certain people who work for IPAC, which is the Interparliamentary Alliance on China, which is this grouping largely of sanctioned MPs from throughout the world, who have been refused admission to certain countries. So that is the very real risk, that are we actually safe to go anywhere we want outside China itself? So I may have got off lightly, just being put on the next plane home 7 hours later, rather than being detained and shipped off to a Beijing gulag.
Well, that's it, because that is a different thing, isn't it? Being deported is bad enough, but to be then deported to a country where you are seen as a hostile actor, and the punishment you would face there, there'd be a very real risk that you'd never come home.
No, and then they'd have to have a by-election. I'm not sure what happens with by-elections then if you're detained elsewhere and you don't show up to vote. But no, it is a serious concern. I mean, I think I've come off relatively lightly compared to some of my colleagues who've had some real intimidation, been hacked severely. Some of their family members have been intimidated as well. So this has been overhanging us for the last 3 years. And why were we sanctioned? Purely for getting up in Parliament and calling out China for its human rights abuses in Xinjiang and Tibet, and making sure that they don't get involved in our security contracts and our Huawei 5G contracts and things like that. So, you know, this is one of the first tangible episodes where clearly the long hand of China has had something to do with it.
There's a real irony to this as well, isn't there? Because on the Select Committee, you have been the most effective parliamentarian at finding those holes in the Rwanda policy. And, you know, your exchange with Suella Braverman went viral. And here you are in a position where actually you might go to one country and be deported to another.
Well, the irony of a Tory MP being deported from Africa didn't go unnoticed, I have to say, particularly this Tory MP who had voted for the Rwanda legislation. I was about to do an exchange, you know.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Because you voted for it, but you really hold your own side to account in a way that is often deeply embarrassing for ministers.
But that's the job of a Select Committee. And I think why the Home Affairs Select Committee has been so successful, and I've been on it for 10 years, and I really enjoy it. I think it's one of the most important parts of my job, is that on a non-partisan basis, you are there to hold, in this case, the Home Office, its officials, its ministers, and all the agencies it's responsible for, to account. And in some cases, that means really putting a spotlight on some of their inadequacies. And I have to say, one of the most inadequate parts of the Home Office is the Permanent Secretary and his immediate staff who have come in front of us and have been completely and utterly hopeless. You know, we've had some not terribly impressive performances by Home Secretaries and ministers before. We've had some good performances too. So, but it's only right that we are there to flag up what's going wrong and to point out what's going right. And with the Home Office, I'm afraid, far more things seem to go wrong than go right. It is the most dysfunctional department of government, and that goes under all government. It's not a political thing.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm thinking particularly of the exchange with Suella Braverman over Rwanda and safe and legal routes and everything. I totally accept that you can vote for something and then hold it to account, and that's not a contradictory thing. But when you're poking the sorts of holes in it that you were, did it make you think, actually, maybe this isn't a good policy and it's not going to be delivered well?
So my exchange with Suella Braverman was about safe and legal routes. So I take a very balanced view on the whole migration thing and small boats. But I think we have a long tradition in this country, which I'm proud of and I want us to maintain, of offering safe haven to genuine asylum seekers, particularly unaccompanied child asylum seekers, and those who do have genuine links with the UK, who are genuinely escaping war, persecution, torture, whatever it may be. And we need to make it easier for some of those people to have their claims assessed, and certainly without having to pay people smugglers and come across to the UK in the most dangerous and inappropriate way. And as a result of that, the government actually agreed, and in the Illegal Migration Act last year, as a result of my amendments, made it clear that they have to introduce further safe legal routes actually later this year. So for those people that have genuinely got a chance of coming to the UK and being accepted, then there's a procedure. Now, if we do that, then I think it makes it much more justified and right that we absolutely clamp down on bogus asylum seekers. And I'm afraid there are far too many people coming across the channel who are not genuine asylum seekers. They are economic migrants And in many cases, there are people we absolutely should not have in the country, and they are gaming the system. And the biggest victims of that are the genuine asylum seekers who are effectively being bumped down the list because of these people who've got money to pay the people, smugglers. So that's why I justified the Rwanda policy, because it's about getting tough on those who are abusing the system, meaning that we can look after those to whom we do have a genuine duty of care more appropriately without them having to go through the dangerous method of coming across the channel, as it were. So I think that's even-handed.
Your constituency is on the south coast of England. Do you get boats coming to your shores?
Very rarely. There was we've had a few instances of some dinghies coming into Shoreham Beach, but we're a bit too far down the west down the channel. But you know, it's not far away, and it's a big thing for people, particularly on the south coast, where you know our coast guard and our lifeboats will be involved in operations as well. So no, it's a big issue down here, but it's a big thing for the whole country. And you know, whatever you think about migration, and what do you think about how many people should be coming to the country and how we take refugees or whatever, I think most people are just angry and frustrated and exasperated that there are people coming to the country who do not have a proper case for coming into the country, and in some cases where it's virtually practically impossible to return them to their own countries, they are going to be here for the foreseeable future at the taxpayers' expense. Once they get into British territorial waters, it becomes our responsibility. And that's just not fair, and it's particularly not fair on genuine people who most people in this country, I think, would want to see looked after and rescued.
You know what I don't understand is you're still so animated about everything, and yet you're standing down at the next election. What's going on?
Well, I'm always animated, and there's a lot I still want to do. But I've been thinking about this for quite a few months. So I've done 27 years, which, as my wife keeps pointing out to me, is two life sentences. And Parliament is a very different place from when I came in 1997. And a lot of my mates are standing down as well. There are various things I want to do, and I'm not quite at retirement age. I think I've got time and energy to do it. And frankly, if I don't do it now, it's never going to happen. And frankly, Matt, I want my weekends back. You know, I've got vegetables to grow, and I've got things to do, and I quite like to see a bit more of my family. And yet my whole diary is ruled by the weekly whip I get, which tells me when I have to show up in Parliament at certain times, and that overrides everything else. And to have done that for 27 years, I mean, it's quite a discipline, and I just want a bit of freedom.
But and I tell you, MP, and grow your vegetables. You surely can do both.
I do. I could show you my trophies. I mean, you wouldn't believe some of my turnips. I've got cups galore, which is my bit of therapy. I tell you, I've got a fantastic compost heap. That's my therapy on Sundays if I get any time. But I tell you what I did do that really set me thinking, do I want to fight another election? Last November, I went to Iraq. Because I don't know if you remember, I trained as an archaeologist. My great love before politics was archaeology. And I've been trying to go to a British Museum dig in Iraq for years. Then COVID came and then there was a security situation. Anyway, the British Museum invited me to go last November. The Foreign Office said, no, you must not go. It's too dangerous. So I said, thank you very much. Got $10 million kidnap insurance arranged, which was one of the conditions, and went to Iraq. And we had armed guards and everything. But anyway, I spent a week in the desert, in Iraq, in a trench, digging up a 3rd millennium BC Sumerian temple. And I was a pig in shit, I tell you. The only problem, it was 40 degrees. We had to start digging at 5:30 in the morning. But I got my trowel out. First time I'd done it for a few years. And I was absolutely loving it. And so I want to do more of this. Why am I spending time in Parliament late at night waiting for votes, talking to terrible people, answering 350 emails a day, having to do podcasts with Matt Ford and speaking to all these bloody journalists and all this, when I quite like to do something a bit more quirky, like digging up in the desert.
But so, if you want to be somewhere that's got 40 degree heat and full of relics, Parliament's your place.
That's the House of Lords. That's the thing. That's the thing that endears me to the House of Lords. It's the only museum where you have living exhibits. But anyway, enough about my prejudices of the House of Lords.
Would you not go into the Lords then?
Well, it's quite tempting, isn't it? I very much doubt I'm going to be asked. So there's going to be a whole load of other much more worthy people than me who might be shunted up there. But no, I mean, the thing I will miss, as you just said, I'm still very animated. I still believe very strongly in a number of things. There's a lot of things I've not succeeded in doing that I still want to do. And I'm still going to be jumping up and down and shouting at the television with things I don't like or whatever. And being an MP gives you a platform to be able to say that to people like you, to mainstream media, and to raise issues in Parliament. And that I shall find really hard to adapt to. So, you know, the House of Lords still gives a platform to do that. But look, that's out of my pay grade. That would be nice if it was something like that. But I'm not going to shut up just because I'm leaving Parliament. It's just a question of if anybody's going to listen to me anymore.
Oh, I'm sure the vegetables will listen. You'd be like Prince Charles talking to his plants.
Yeah, very good.
But you, is it also that you think, well, the Tories are probably going to lose the next election. So then, I know you're on a select committee, but you're still in the party of government, and that is different to being on the opposition benches. And you think, well, it's also the political timing of it, isn't it?
I don't have a problem with that. Look, when I came in 1997, there were 33 Conservative MPs elected for the first time, and we'd lost half the parliamentary party. So it was carnage, much as the local election results have reinforced we've just said today. But, you know, we were very enthusiastic newbies then, and we were starting out in Parliament for the first time, so we got on with it. And I don't have a problem with opposition. Actually, it's much easier holding the opposition government to account than your own government, where, although I haven't held back with some of that, but, you know, at the times, you really want to go for the jugular. So I quite like opposition, but I've done it all before. So it's fine when you come in for the first time, but 27 years later, do we want to start all over again? And I think the thing I'm most concerned about is if there is a change of the government, and who knows, it's looking likely, but anything could happen in the next 6 months, because God knows everything has happened in the last 6 months and beyond. And my recollection of 1997 to 2001, where we had William Hague became the leader, the only leader of the Tory party where I've been on the successful campaign team for, which has been part of my problem. And interesting though it was, between 1997 and 2001, we achieved absolutely nothing. You know, we got, I think we won one more seat in 2001, which wasn't under William Hague because he was a brilliant leader, but it was just the timing was all wrong. And I think to spend the next few years in what could be a very frustrating time if Labour gets its act together, and they could be there for longer, it's all very well if you're doing it for the first time, but I think doing it for the second time, there's a lot of deja vu. And I think, as I say, there are lots of other things I could be more gainfully doing, I think.
What about the effect that, obviously, when Sunak goes to the polls, he's standing on his own record, but he's also the third Prime Minister since the last election. And certainly the two before him were controversial in their own way. What have you made of what Liz Truss has been up to since she left Downing Street?
Oh, God. I've just been asked to review her book for the House magazine. I haven't pulled any punches. It'll be out in a couple of weeks. I remember very clearly when she came to power, and then we had the mini budget. And the reason I remember it is that I was in the Arctic, and I was on a boat with 10 members of the Commons and the Lords visiting Greenland. We were out of range for Wi-Fi, or I didn't get any emails or internet connection for several days. And that period coincided entirely with Liz Truss's car crash of a venture into government. And I was in the best place to be, in the Arctic. So then we came back and found out what had gone on. And it was not the Conservative Party's best time, I have to say, in government. It was a real aberration, and for whatever reason, you know, she became the leader. I didn't vote for her, and it all ended in tears. Now, if I were in her position, I'd probably keep my head down and stay quiet. And now she seems to be wanting to go on the sort of world celebrity tour, although most of the speeches she seems to be making are abroad because they're the ones more interested in her. And now she's trying to reinvent herself as the sort of the saviour of conservatism and this whole pop cons or whatever they've called. I mean, just shut up. It's not helpful. It's not credible. It's certainly not helping the Conservative Party. I mean, I have made a virtue out of not belonging to various factions or special interest groups within the Conservative Party. I am a member of the Conservative Party. I'm a Conservative MP elected as a Conservative MP to support the Conservative Party and its manifesto. And all these five families or whatever all these whirly-eyed groups springing up are entirely self-indulgent, self-destructive, and really unhelpful. Please concentrate on promoting the Conservative government and attacking the Labour Party rather than ourselves. And she's, you know, not helping on that score. But hey-ho, I'm sure it'll all be fine.
All this deep state stuff and like the conspiracy element of it, do you think she genuinely believes it? Or is this just someone who's so embarrassed by what happens? She's trying to find an excuse that isn't saying I was wrong and I made a huge mess and I'm sorry.
I don't know. And I've read her book, and it's an interesting book. I have to say it's an annoyingly easy read. I thought it might be a bit turgid, but it's not. It's quite an easy to read book. But there's a hell of a lot of what I call back jobbing, you know, the chronology of the stuff in the book. So all the things that are fashionable now seem to have been underpinning her thinking when she was prime minister and then when she was DEFRA secretary or justice secretary or whatever. And it just doesn't add up. And although she keeps claiming that she's not there to sort of, you know, reinvent herself as prime minister, that's what the book is all about. It's about a justification and that everybody was out to get her. I mean, even the Queen. I mean, there's a thing I put in my review. When the Queen goes and dies on her watch, it's why now? Why me? I think is the phrase she uses. Even the Queen's got it in for her and sort of, you know, threw herself on her sword just to make it tricky for Liz Truss. It's not credible. I mean, I'm sure she tried her hardest, but frankly, she shouldn't have been there.
Do you worry about the effect of this and other things on the Tory party? There is, in a way, Labour's entryism was more explicit and was there was more focus on it. But do you feel like the complexion of the Tory party has changed a bit? That you've got maybe a few more conspiracy theories knocking around or a few, I don't know what you call them, sort of alt-right types in your waters?
I think it's completely different to the Labour Party. There are a few individuals who are going around with all sorts of conspiracy theories who are a bit too close to the, you know, Bannum and sort of Trumpite factions in the States. But it's not a sort of systematic infiltration of the Tory party like Momentum was and to an extent still is, and, you know, getting Corbyn and everything at the ahead of it. I think it's very, very different. You know, the Tory party just needs to all focus on being the Tory party rather than trying to be the latest invention of what real conservatism supposedly is. I'm a bit old school on that, you know, but I've been a member of the party and an activist within the party for 47 years now. And never have I seen a time when having all these sorts of factions and people popping up claiming to be the saviour of real conservatism have ever worked or done us any good or, more importantly, done the country any good.
Yes, one thing you could do now is you could legitimately get your own show on GB News.
It's a great. It's a crowded market, though, Matt, isn't it? I would quite like to do some radio. Perhaps I could come and do a joint podcast with you, and we could earn even more money than Alistair Campbell and Rory Stewart.
Got yourself a
deal. About that?
Let's try.
It would be much more funny, I tell you.
Tim, Yeah, obviously, well, you have as long as left as the Prime Minister allows this Parliament to run, but you will be missed from Parliament. You're a big part of the tone of the House of Commons in a positive way, and your role on the Select Committee has been fantastic.
So well, I'm going to miss it.
You'll be missed.
Yeah, well, that's kind. I mean, I tell you, what's the most worrying thing? And I was standing at the polling station yesterday with a number of people who came up to me and say, look, we're really sorry to see you go. I've never voted Conservative, but can I just say what a great job you've done? And the number of people who said that, I mean, made me think, how the bloody hell did I get re-elected seven times if they were my constituents saying that? So I've had some really nice comments from people who don't share my politics, which I think is the ultimate compliment when you've hopefully done a pretty good job in the interests of not your party, but in the greater interests of making Parliament work better and doing some good stuff for the country, which sounds a bit arrogant to say that, but I hope, you know, that's what I've tried to do over the last 27 years, and I will miss it, and I'll have to go to some sort of recuperation, rehabilitation class to get wean myself off it probably, but we'll see. But I'll still come on your show.
Excellent. Tim, I'm so, it's been a talking to you again, and coming on and for being as always so candid.
Well, I'm not going to stop that. I can do it without getting to trouble with the whips in the future as well, so even better.
Well, there you go, Tim Lawton. I can't believe he's off. He's absolutely... He's always been such a great character. He's a great heckler in the House of Commons. He's very funny. And you need those personalities. And a big personality in the right way, not in someone who's just being silly all the time and is trying to become Prime Minister. But someone who actually is witty and takes the job seriously, but also enjoys doing it. But it also sounds like he's going to enjoy not being a Member of Parliament as well, which I totally understand. But his stuff about Djibouti is terrifying because he could go to any country now and potentially be deported, not home, but to China. And the consequence of that, of course, would be terrifying. And this will be other people as well, not just him, and not just MPs on that list. But the potential for this to be extended to anyone who's been a critic of China and to go to a country that isn't China and then end up there is obviously very, very concerning. So really, it's incredible that it's happened to him. But he talks about it so well. But yes, there we go. Well, what a fantastic guest. And his assessment of his own party and what's gone on lately as well was just really funny as well. But I'll be back next week with another fantastic guest. I'll see you then. Ta-ra.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.